Good morning, everybody. Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors, Tex Homer, Eric Nalin, and then we have Charlie coming too. We got caught in that wonderful DFW traffic. We are going to talk remaining recruiting needs. We're going to talk Derek Cooper's recruitment as well, maybe some of the NIL world stuff, and then also I'll ask Eric some questions about this last week of team notes he has updated us on. Before we do that, though, you guys need to join InsideTexas.com today. It's only $1 until the Ohio State game, new members only, best board in the land, funny, smart community, recruiting updates, analysis from Paul and Ian, and of course, always great team stuff from Eric and Justin, and that's only going to heat up as we go into camp. Also, our very own Paul Wadlington dropped his 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, Thinking Texas Football. It is the best Texas preview in existence. This is not hyperbole. This is not promotion. It's the best Texas preview on the market every single year. Not just that, you're going to be able to get an SEC preview for all other teams, as well as a recruiting piece by Eric and a piece by Paul on roster management in this new world of college football. You need to buy this book. Go click the description and you will see the links for the physical copy as well as the digital copy. Eric, good morning, dude.
What's up?
We got some comments going. Eric, still, when are you coming back home? Are you there for the whole month?
Friday, right after our Friday inside the program, I will be hitting the road.
Cool, man. All right. Good morning, Roaster. We got some. Yeah. Jason, good morning, guys. You guys got a lot of comments. You guys are excited. Probably a Derek Cooper excitement hangover going on. Let's talk Cooper first things first. We'll just play his tape and kind of talk through that recruitment. But also, more importantly, what Texas is getting here. All right. It's a big back. That's an important aspect, too, right? NFL size, all that stuff is going to matter. And then, you know, big narrative online is like, he didn't even take an official visit. He did come unofficially. So we can quit doing that. But what's the latest on Derek Cooper after his big announcement on Sunday?
Well, I think Texas is going to have to continue recruiting him through the whistle. Obviously, he's going to get his official visit taken care of in the fall. You know, from Texas's perspective, hopefully that helps buy him in even further and solidify his commitment. But, you know, I'm pretty sure that Miami's going to make a late run at him later in the cycle. They're probably figuring out their financials after getting Cantwell. Georgia took it on the chin on that one, too. But here you see a very big back with, you know, straight line speed. He's a hot knife through butter. Look at, you know, he's got that breakaway speed that you don't often see at a running back that big. That's why I've kind of compared him to Darren McFadden. I don't know if that might be a little bit too hyperbolic, but a similar back, Carlos Williams that played at Florida State, is another one that, cause I thought Carlos played safety in college, was a bigger safety, probably could have played linebacker. Derek Cooper could obviously play linebacker if he wanted to, similar skill set.
Yeah, all-around athlete we see here on the tape. And then a lot of inside running, able to cut. And, of course, as I say that, he's probably going to bust an outside run. That's just how it works with the tape. But he had good inside running, and then you see he played multiple positions. He's an athlete beyond just being the running back, too. And it's I like to see that running backs that played linebacker, I like them to understand that position and how to defeat it at the next level, too. It's the same thing if you had someone who was a wide receiver in a corner in high school. I always enjoy that thing. Coach, what do you think?
Yeah, look, when I wrote about what Texas is getting in him, the one person that came to mind thinking about it was Miles Jack, who played running back and linebacker, right? And then Miles was a special running back, but he's also an awesome linebacker. I feel like this kid can do both of them, man. He's just a big kid who he can outrun you, run through you, run around you, like whatever it is.
Play high speed.
I love hearing coverage. Like, man, this looks natural. Like, he's a natural fluid athlete. Dude,
yeah.
He can do it all. It's just absolute stud, man. Nothing he can't do. He's a big man amongst boys out there on this film.
Watching his ceremony too, I like the mental eval. He seems like a good kid. Just hearing him talk, a lot of the times I don't hear him talk, you know, I read the recruiting articles and stuff like that, so it's always big. I thought he gave a good interview, and that was also a well-conducted ceremony. I mean, they had their stuff laid out, he had shirts, like it was a well put together event too. There was some good event planning, but this looking like the only back we're going to take in this class, and we're good with that.
Chat. Yeah, the question here is he a cut in line guy? Thank you for the super chat. Hey, absolutely. Look at, you know, you just don't see this combination of size and speed all that often. That's why he's rated where he is. And, you know, we know that their effort that they had to put forth, they view him as a guy that's going to play early, despite having a lot of bodies. Now, I think they're also protecting themselves from the fact that they do have three draft-eligible running backs, even if none of them are certain to leave, Trey Wise and C.J. Baxter and even Christian Clark. One of those guys could break out this season and potentially leave. I think they want a guy that could come in and play early. But they also like James Simon and Ricky Stewart, who they got in the last class. So it's not going to be easy for him to cut in line, but he certainly has the talent. And outside of Xavier Kroll, I don't think there was another running back that they prioritized this much outside of when Tashard Choice was here. They were all over kid at Notre Dame. But this is probably the most prioritized running back on the board outside of Crowell.
Yeah.
And he had a previous relationship with Scott, right?
Yeah, Scott knew him. Scott has recruited Florida for forever, pretty much. So, yeah, he knows Florida very well. Obviously, he wasn't going to get him at West Virginia, just like Mark Orfeh was not going to get Samari Matthews at Rutgers. But then you go put on that new logo, and all of a sudden you look a little bit more attractive.
Yeah, how does that work? So, that's what I always think about. When you get a coach from a non-top program, and clearly the question is answered because he was talking to him ahead of time. But that's what I worry about, because sometimes you're recruiting in a different tier, right? So you might not even really be talking to the elite guys by the time you move. Now you need to build relationships. But these guys have figured it out kind of quickly. But that's why I always wonder, when you get a coach that's rising, but they weren't necessarily in for five stars, how long that kind of takes. But, hey, he did it year one.
Yeah, look, at the G5 program, you got to shoot your shot at these top guys. You offer them anyway, right?
You
trying to see if you can get some buzz around your program. So you're building that authentic relationship, even if at a lower program, but because you just never know where you're going to be the next year.
Yeah, it's true, man.
Or the portal happens. Yeah.
I was watching a Detroit Lions preseason documentary, and I had to watch them interview Choice, and I was like, "Damn, man, it was a bummer." But I'm excited with getting this. And
Choice is still helping a little bit behind the scenes. He's still being a good Texas guy behind the scenes, though. I was wrong on that. Christian Clark is this is only his second year, and he missed his first year. Is that right? What year was he in?
No, it's his second year. He had the Achilles year one.
Yeah, okay, yeah. He came in with the Jared Gibson class.
Yeah. And so this is a great addition. And we're going to talk now about the rest of the needs. We said we're only going to take one running back. That makes sense now. But let's talk through the other positions, kind of see what we still are looking for. After we went down into the depths, the dark night of the soul, and then we return triumphant again on a recruiting spree. Let's kind of see where things play out here. The quarterback position, Eric, what do we need? What are we missing anything here? We only have the number one quarterback in the nation.
Yeah, maybe the best high school quarterback to come out since Arch, too. So
I agree.
I don't think I think they're set at quarterback. And, you know, these needs look a lot different than they did. You know, probably the lowest Texas fans got was after Braden Rouse picked Tennessee, at least on Inside Texas. They've come a long way since that. What was that, 10 days ago?
Yeah, you got it. It takes a while, but you can bounce back. And just that one was rough, though. We went for like 3 for 17, and then so everyone was like, even I was like, all right, guys, what's going on?
Yeah,
but hell of a turnaround.
Yeah,
especially cold-blooded Sark at SEC Media Days. Like, all right, we're gonna show you guys what's up. Yeah. All right, running back. This was written before Cooper committed, so this is now a zero. We're able to land Cooper.
Yep. They should be good. Now they have to continue recruiting him. And if I were them, I would probably make some inroads with some other guys just in case they have to flip somebody late if they lose Derek Cooper. You know, you always have to plan for the unforeseen. But if it holds right here, they've got the number one quarterback in the nation and one of the top running backs in the nation in the same backfield. Pretty stout stuff here.
Definitely.
Yeah, we got to play defense too, right? We got good players too. So it's, you know, we're like, we need to add X, Y, and Z. It's like, we also need to make sure no one comes over the top with a real nice offer. What's the deal with Florida, man? We're recruiting like their top guys consistently. This feels like Texas 6 years ago, but for the Florida schools.
Yeah. I mean, you've got FSU is down a little bit. Florida, you know, finally gathered themselves and got stabilized last cycle. And then, you know, Miami's been a little bit up and down. And I'm not sure I've heard that they're having a little bit of financial issues, which, you know, sounds crazy because they just got Cantwell, but maybe that's part of the financial issues because they invested so heavily there. It's just that it's a pretty wide open state right now. Those kids are used to going out of state. They're just not always used to going to Texas.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I remember that frustration at Texas when all the top players, it's like, great, he's going to Ohio State.
And oh, man, that 2017 class. Yeah, Jeffrey Okuda, Baron Browning, Alvin Wilson went to Florida State. Yeah, it was that 20. And you know, had Charlie Strong somehow righted the ship, they were going to challenge for the top class in the nation that year. And then, of course, it all fell apart.
Yep. All right, we're still looking at tight end. So Brown, son of UFC heavyweight Travis Brown.
Yeah.
There was some talk very close after his recruitment. Then that kind of went away for a second, maybe looking at other guys, whatever happened there. But what's kind of the deal with tight end?
Man, we have to investigate that a little further because, yeah, I'm pretty sure that he would have already been in the class. I mean, look who they're getting in the class right now. He would have been committed by now had they been pushing for it. Maybe they slowed him down a little bit. Maybe they're just, weighing all their options. I do think they only need one tight end in this class. They could honestly skip it if they absolutely wanted to.
Class is going to be stupid.
Yeah, but so they could skip it. Although I do like the idea of taking a developmental tight end just because, you know, those guys can require some time. But then you get a lot of bang for your buck on the back end, and that kid was not going to be very expensive at all. I like those guys that are affordable. It's, you know, we talked about it, other positions, you know, Nick Robertson, Max Wright. I'm presuming those guys are not all that expensive. Wide receivers probably weren't all that expensive despite being talented. I like the bargains that you can find, pairing those guys with the cut in line guys with the weight in line guys. But we'll see what they do. I'm not sure. I do think that I think they slowed him down, and I think they're probably weighing all their options and want to see some senior film.
Well, Brown, too, mental evals there, right? If you're going to be a longer-term development guy, he plays hard. He played multiple positions. He still needs to grow. But as far as, like, playing hard on the field, willing contact willingness, all that stuff was there, too.
Yeah.
So you could get a good room guy as well that's going to work out hard and do things right. So it's not just a developmental guy. You're bringing in a good mental eval there, too.
And there's nothing wrong with having a guy who is willing to play special teams and make plays on special teams. So he'll be an added piece of that.
For sure.
Yeah, some of his most intriguing tape was some of camp footage of him playing edge, and you could see his mobility, his footwork was pretty strong for a guy his size.
Yeah, and like I said, the dad's genetics, right? He has the genetics to grow into a big guy, and I highly doubt that you're going to be soft if your dad's a UFC heavyweight.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance in hell that kid is soft.
Yeah, so let's see. Wide receiver here. We could stand pat, or we could grab another one. Jermaine Bishop is the one that makes it interesting. I was watching Sark at the Texas High School Coaches Association. He kept referring to him as a two-way player and then named two-way players that he's had in the past. So we'll see if that comes true. But I did know he made a point and said, look, I've had two-way players before as well. So that's interesting. But like we said, we could stay here or we could hope, you know, try to flip one of these targets that are still down below.
Yeah, they're still weighing all their options. You know, I don't know that they're going to be able to get a lot to flip because I don't think they want to spend that much. They spent quite a bit the year before with that haul of Lockett and French, and those guys are starting to look pretty dang good. So they feel like they've got pieces to develop.
Yeah.
That's two really good wide receivers in Cohen Brown and Chris Stewart, and then you know a potential difference maker in Jermaine Bishop. They could hold pat right here if they want to.
Yeah. Jabari Mack, haven't heard that name in a little while. So that was interesting. I remember we were getting close with him before he went to LSU.
Yeah, absolutely. It was Texas finished. I think Texas finished second to that one. Now, when a kid stays home at LSU, it's no surprise they've had a tremendous run of wide receivers. But yeah, Texas is still kind of kicking the tires and just checking in every once in a while.
Yeah. How are those Tigers doing? Thank you, Brett. I'm ready for the season two, man. I'm in full tape mode, dude. I'm just watching games over and over again. So, yeah, I'm in the same place. To my wife's dismay, who is not a football fan. And so I'm just constantly – last night we needed to watch Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders show about the making of the team there. I said, this is football adjacent enough. We can make this work. So I've also been scouting the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. I can tell you guys a lot about how I feel about that team. Apparently, I do have strong opinions on who makes that team and who doesn't. If you guys holler at me, I can do evals. I'm not just a one-trick pony in football, guys. right.
It's about to be, we're about to be pretty season focused here. It's, you know, Cooper was probably the last one. I don't know, you know, unless Devon Benjamin announces soon, I'm not sure that there's going to be another commitment, at least not imminent. So, hey,
yeah,
we got season, what season, they report on the 29th and then they start practice the next day. So that's coming up. Our focus is about to change.
Yeah. Offensive line. So we got Turntine, our left tackle, and then Eric Minson, right, Robertson, guys that aren't super expensive, longer development curves, but still good players. Still want to try to get one or two here. That Felix Ojo miss lets you know that we wanted two tackles. Hopefully we can get a flip or maybe a late eval. What are we thinking here?
Yeah, I think they definitely need another tackle. Charlie just wrote an article about some tackles they could look at. That offensive tackle was the biggest need coming into the class. They've done a decent job so far. You know, they got Turntime, which, you know, they had to work harder for that than I think anybody expected. Max Wright is a good prospect, but they need another guy for sure. Charlie could mention some of those guys.
Yeah.
I mentioned in the article, I talked about, you know, Zaden Crippen. You know, he's committed to A&M. Him and Coach Calpella had a great relationship before, you know, official visit season, right? You still have Malachi Lee out there. It's another kid. I was looking for his name just now, but he's out of Miami. He's actually committed to Miami. It's another Florida guy that recently talked to Texas. Big 6'6", 280-pound tackle. I was looking for his name in my previous article, but you have him. It's another big kid, big Juice Johnson out of Supple Springs. He's committed to TCU. He's recently talked to Texas. So I think you're going to have a lot of senior evals that you can, you know, for backup just in case guys. But, you know, you also, like Eric has mentioned multiple times, you can continue to recruit the big board because you just never know, you know, what may happen with some of the top guys that you had up there. Joel Irvin, got it. Appreciate you, Justin Wells. Joel Irvin is a big kid.
Coach, what do you got? What's the strategy, right? Because it seems like Texas was very upfront that Ojo and Turntine are our guys. And then you lose Ojo. And then the other tackles are like, well, I heard what you said. So, like, how do you play that game? Because you do want to be open in front and recruiting, but then you don't want that situation to happen. How do you thread that needle? How do you play that recruiting game?
I mean, honestly, you could go back to the previous conversations. I mean, Ojo made it known that he knew that he was the main guy, right? And I'm not sure what the message was to flood to the Crimpin, but I do know for a fact that he made him a priority, right? So he didn't feel like he was almost second fielder. He made him a priority. He saw him multiple times, did two in-home visits, saw him at the school. So he felt like a priority. I'm sure Malachi Lee, they flew all the way to Hawaii. I mean, how many coaches? I mean, everybody wants to take that trip.
I was going to say, go to Hawaii,
but at the same time, like, you made the effort. You were his first offer. He really, really liked Texas. So I don't think they felt almost second fiddle somewhat, but, you know, you just kind of lean back to the relationships you had and the conversation that you had. I'm sure they didn't go in there and say, hey, look, Ojo's in front of you. All right. If something happens, we'll come after you. I'm sure that's not the conversation they had. And so you just never know. Maybe they probably felt that way, but I think that's why you continue to just lean on the relationships that you have built and how you sold the kid and how you see him fitting in at your program at the end of the day.
Cool. All right, guys, before we keep going, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
Back to school, baby. Back to school.
Yeah.
Does Ojo go 4 years at Tech? Are you talking about, is he going to transfer or is he going to go out to N3 to the league? What do you
think? I don't think he's going to be there 4 years. My thesis is that he's going, by the time he's really coming into his own, he's going to be off to the NFL. Kind of like, well, Cam Williams, I wouldn't even say he actually came in his own. It's just, you know, got drafted after 3 years. I think it's going to be 3 years, but that first year and a half might be a little bit rough.
Yeah. The traits are there, guys. That's what the NFL wants. The NFL has this, for good and for bad, ego about their evaluation. So a player can have glaring issues, but they're like, we'll wait until they get into our coaching staff, you know? So it's like, it's all about traits, but it's amazing how, you know, you can know this Texas football team. You're like, dude, Jordan Whittington, wherever you go, he's going to be all right. Right. Roshan Johnson is going to be all right. But you'll see these glaring issues with players in the leagues. Like, don't care. He has X measurable. Okay, let's look at defensive tackle. This is a hell of a room, boys. Remaining needs, big fat zero. I'm going to 100% agree there. This is an awesome class, man. This is what we've been wanting to do for the past several years at that position. So, Eric, what's the latest, man?
Yeah, hey, they're done. Well, of course, they've got to continue to recruit all those guys. Yeah. You know, Mississippi State or Ole Miss will be coming after Corey Wells. You know, Florida stay on Vodney. Everybody was going to stay on James Johnson. So, you know, they have to continue recruiting all those guys. But, yeah, Kenny Baker knocked it out of the park. He was so close to running them off one after another last year, even in his first year. And it just didn't happen right away. You know, he had the – obviously, had, you know, Charles and Sharma, you know, went to different schools on the same day, June 28th, before Sharma flipped in July and Charles after when Texas beat Michigan. So he had to play the long game there, but he was very close to getting like three in a row his first cycle this year. He just, you know, he hit a grand slam.
And he did it early, too. That was the nice part. Hey, man.
Yeah, I like the fact that they've got so many guys committed. You know, a lot of years you'd be like, man, what are we going to be writing about in December? Well, hopefully we'll be covering the playoffs in December. We're not going to care about recruiting. Just get those guys signed. Sure.
Yeah.
So I like that, you know, and I don't like dealing with all the fan angst. So having the D tackles, you know, put to bed early, that makes it a lot easier to come to work every day.
Yeah, but 30% of the engagement is angst, dude. You're gonna miss it if it's ever gone, dude. That board posts go way up during angst.
We had it that 23 class. I noted that. I said, man, there is no issues in this program whatsoever. We had nothing. Everybody was trying to make something out of Derek Williams, maybe flipping LSU, and I couldn't even get on with that. There was nothing right about. No, there was no coaching turnover. They were winning. Oh, man. I was I've had that before, and you're right. Like, the hardest part is figuring out what to write.
Yeah, for sure. You just got to make a list of something. That's the key at that point. Edge, we bring in Wesley, who I did not expect to get in the class that early. That was a one that was cool. They're going to target him, but getting him. And then he's been active on social media, too, whenever people commit. It doesn't really mean that much, but it means a little something whenever you see the guys engaged, excited about their class. But we could need one to two more here. The sell of the room is easy. You see the talent in front of you. That might be the inverse of the sell of the room, though, too, because you see the talent in front of you. So it's just it's an interesting room. But, Eric, tell us about these targets we still are looking at.
Yeah, Trenton Henderson, you know, if the number I heard on him, if it's accurate, I assume it's accurate, wouldn't be something that would really keep Texas away from, I don't think. So I think the number is doable. Now, I do think the issue is you know, his mom, they're from Pensacola, you know, 4-hour drive to Baton Rouge. I heard that she wants to be within driving distance. Now, NIL area, yeah, of course, parents tend to move around a little bit more often than they used to. But right now, LSU's got him. But I tend to think that we haven't heard the last of him. And then Jake Kruel, going to be interesting to see what happens there. OU is being very, very aggressive on him. But what kind of season are they going to have? Is Brent Venables even going to be the head coach there? Is he going to just sign up just for the cash? I mean, or, you know, would you rather go to a place that has a lot more stability? So we don't know. And, you know, the key there, I think, is that Florida is not pushing very hard. So if Texas just remains patient, they're going to go into Florida, his backyard, and play Florida right around the time he announces. You know, so we'll see. He wants to announce around his birthday, October 9th. So we're watching that one pretty closely. And then, you know, I'm sure there's, you know, maybe they want to stay on Landon Barnes, kid from Duncanville that, you know, they offered, but they kind of offered with, you know, needing him in the spring or in the fall in mind. It wasn't like a guy that they were pushing for immediately. So
Thank you, Splendid Daddy. Have a good flight, man.
Yeah, man.
Got the Georgia sucks in there. Most of the chat now, we're getting a lot of Georgia. Apparently the fans are doing their part to try to hype up a future rivalry of circumstance with Georgia.
No, it's there already, man. It's everywhere.
Texas fans should be trolling Georgia fans unmercilessly. You know, anybody that complains about NIL, especially when, you know, they had James Johnson committed. Was that free? You know, is their number one quarterback, number two quarterback, I should say, was that guy free? I mean, give me a break.
Well, and yeah, Georgia fans acting like, you know, mid-majors that they're getting poached is such a weird concept, especially with their unique recruiting practices that gave them an advantage prior to this era.
Yeah.
So yeah,
was Justin Fields free? You know, that was before NIL. Was that guy free? I'm thinking probably not.
Yeah, so it's just it's pretty wild seeing Georgia fans act like that, because it's like you guys understand the talent acquisition game better than most teams did.
But we also had to make fun of Texas fans, too, crying about Felix Ojo getting all that money. You know, you got the best roster in football.
Dude, the same situation, right? So Cooper commits without an official. Same with Ojo. Whenever Ojo did that, the Texas fans were like, you don't have a relationship. You didn't have an official. And then whenever the fans do that to us, we're like, guys, he visited once before.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the same thing over and over again. Yep. All fans do the same thing. There's no difference. And it's just funny, the like hypocrisy of the situation being the exact same, but we have a different response to it. So it's just how it goes, man. It's
human nature is fixed, and every fan base is comprised of the same type of humans, man.
Yeah, and time is exactly. Time is a flat circle, guys. All right, linebacker Akpala, low stress player in the class. Feel good about him. Tyler Atkinson, of course. I sent that video he did on YouTube to the group chat. I was like, guys, he's going to Texas. You know, it's like he's at all the he's at collective. He's at C4 stuff. I'm like, guys, this is not a small town kid. He likes all the super elite gyms. You can't get all this stuff besides USC. It was just, you know, it was the NIL, right? But it was pretty obvious. And also, it's like, who's around him? It's like every former Texas player. Like, it was pretty absurd. So getting Tyler Atkinson, of course, was awesome. If we're playing some cover three stuff too, man, he's going to be really helpful.
You can do it all, man.
Yeah. So we might need one more. Texas not giving up on Braden Rouse at Tennessee. That was such a unique kid. They were talking about his recruiting practice. He basically had like a rubric where he would put everything into numbers to try to take the emotion out of it. Just seemed like a good kid as well as being a great player. So it makes sense that Texas won't stop there, but it also seems more will merge. So maybe a late eval or somebody is committed elsewhere that we haven't thought of yet.
Oh, man. I hope they just get greedy and find a way to get Rouse done. I love that kid's tape. I'm as high on him as I am Atkinson as far as just being an all-around linebacker. I've likened him to Jordan Hicks coming out of high school. So yeah. I just hope to stay on Braden Rouse. But they do need another one. You know, they didn't hit their numbers last year. And then on top of it, Cunningham is working at Star. Yeah. We don't know, you know, what his future might hold for him. It could be like a little like how Maurice Blackwell played safety for a couple of years, put on some weight, and then moved to linebacker. But numbers are a little bit low, even though there's the room is awesome. It's got tons of talent in there, but they do need another body.
Yeah. Sark is money. Oh, y'all man. Buying it, let's be honest. Here's my thing. If of course Texas is an NIL powerhouse, not denying that. That's great. But let's not act like the other factors aren't here. Most NFL players in the past 2 years – we're getting to the college football playoff. Let's not act like we just popped up and we don't have anything else to sell here. That's the part. Exactly. Sure, money's involved, without a doubt. But Texas is backing it up on the field, too. Players are going to the league. We're going far in the playoffs, that kind of stuff. All the other factors are here.
Yeah, and we're 10 days removed from them going like 3-17, like you said.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. Whenever we took it on the chin, it was Texas can't even get it done. So,
yeah,
it, like you said, Eric, the eternal loop of fandom, the pre-canned responses to everything. Also, come on, guys, with Georgia, you're Georgia. You don't have to act like this, guys. Georgia, man. Y'all are acting like whenever we'd hear like Kansas State fans talk about us. All right, cornerback. We have Hayward Howard, which is the best Southern name ever. I love it every single time. I do think it should be Howard Hayward.
It should.
You know, I do a controversial take, but I still
know, right?
And then, of course, Samari Matthews, who is somebody that's been in Texas orbit for a minute. Glad that he finally pulled the trigger there. Looking like we still want one more. Devon Benjamin, is he a five-star? He's super high-ranked, right? And then
he's a high four-star.
High four-star. So what are we looking at corner?
Devon Benjamin seems to be the guy. Now they've got a couple others that they might bring in the fall. Broadnax, that Travis Stevenson, which spells his name uniquely.
Yeah.
A couple of those guys that are athletes, longer corners. Orfe seems to like the length at the position, although that tells you how special Benjamin is because he's not the biggest guy. But yeah, you know, it's going to be Oregon or Texas for Benjamin. That's the top two. I've heard Oregon is extremely motivated to get that one done. Now Texas just got Samari Matthews, and they on top of all these other guys, you know, Derek Cooper, all those guys cost a lot. We're not denying that to this Mississippi State fan. He's a Mississippi State
fan. If he's a Mississippi State fan, it's actually fair game, and this all these comments make total sense. That's kind of the fan that I was talking about.
It might be.
So but, if you're not a Georgia fan, this is actually on par.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see if Texas can get it done. That was an expensive run of commits there. So do they still have the gas pedal to go in on Devon Benjamin? You know, we'll have to figure that one out.
And shout out to Coach Orfe too, man. He killed it at the Texas High School Football Association convention, man. He got a lot of buy-in from a lot of coaches that was in that room, and so they would all want to send their kids to him. So he did a great job.
Yeah, he's an up and comer, man.
Yaheem Riley might need one safety here. Paris Melvin, I remember him early in the cycle as well. Houston, I think we can get that done if we want to get that done. Boys, why not?
I think they might be a little bit too similar. They kind of do the same things. I don't know if they want two of those guys. But, yeah, I mean, Melvin is good. You know, I think everybody has to look at U of H a little bit differently. They're recruiting pretty well right now. Willie Fritz has always been really good evaluator. I like Melvin, but I don't, you know, it's kind of similar to Riley. You know, maybe they want to play a long game and try to find an elite guy.
Did y'all see the Wishbone documentary that ESPN put out a couple days ago? I was talking about it in the group chat. Have y'all seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
Man, it is, it's a great documentary. You should check it out. It was brutal. Someone mentioned Daryl K. Royth. Don't think we could buy players if we wanted to. Man, DKR, man, given that scheme to everyone else, that documentary just kind of harps on how crazy of a decision that was. And then they go into like Switzer's personality and stuff. It's a really good documentary to show. And then A&M gets the coach. That was crazy. And they kind of talk about it. It's like the death of honor in college football. They're like, you know how insane that would be now for a coach to give another coach their scheme. You should watch it. It's pretty eye opening on kind of the old guard and the honor, and then the new wave of what can happen. So check it out.
Mississippi State fan is still in here crying.
I was watching. They have a preseason, like going into fall camp video. I'm watching everybody's stuff. It was. It'll be interesting to see what Mississippi State can do with Levy. It was funny seeing Brennan Thompson like talking about the culture of Mississippi State, like he's not been there for 20 minutes, you know.
They're in a tough spot. They lost their quarterback to LSU. That guy decided to go sit at LSU rather than play at Mississippi State. That's got to stay.
He is a good player, man.
He was. Yeah, he's a good player.
And he was like a Rivals 5-star early in that process. Mm-hmm. And then it just fell off, but. He's a good player. Everybody knows how I feel about Blake Shapen. I think I'm the only Blake Shapen supporter I've met personally. So we'll see what Shapen can do. But Mississippi State is going to be interesting. Anybody in year two is kind of interesting to me right now. All right, guys. Before we keep going, let's hear a word from Andre, the lawyer.
This video is brought to you by Andre, the lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the lawyer to fight for you. Principal offices in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is.
It's in the description, guys. Andre, our first sponsor. He's been riding with us, man. Shout out, Andre.
That's my dude.
Hell yeah. All right. Let's go through some of your team notes, Eric. I want to ask you questions because I do this show with you on Monday, and then I'll see you again until Monday. So it's like, all right, I still got questions. Joe gets to ask them on Fridays. Let's do this.
Fire away.
Start. We'll just go through it a little bit here. Offensive line, this is what I'm interested in. The depth at offensive line, a little scary, right? We think we like the frontline starters, but we don't want anybody to get hurt. But kind of what are our backups options here? We just keep hearing again and again and again about Nick Brooks.
Yeah, but I'm worried about depth at tackle this season. And maybe for next season, too. I think they can figure out ways to make it work with the interior line. You know, Cole Hudson could play guard if he had to. Connor Robertson could probably play center. They can even move a tackle to guard. But the tackle depth is my biggest concern. You know, 2023, they had a lot of luck. I think every single offensive lineman started that entire season. Last year, we saw a little bit of bad luck towards the end of the season, although Trevor Goosby was able to save the day. They don't have a guy that's ready to step in. like Goosby if one of the two starters is hurt. So, you know, maybe it's Jaden Chapman. Maybe they just let Nick Brooks go out there and try to get by on pure ability. But he's still, you know, he's still got a long way to go.
No thanks. Don't love that plan. We can go with pure ability. That, no thank you, but that'll be the trick. We also are hearing about Jaden Chapman, who kind of got lost in the shuffle. Fans were excited when he got there, but we haven't discussed him a ton, right, Eric? So what's going on? Why are we discussing him now?
Yeah, you know, he's been in the program for a while, every bit as long as Trevor Goosby. And you know, he had a pretty good spring until he suffered a minor knee issue that I think cost him some time. But this, you know, source says, yeah, this is his turn. He's got to kind of do whatever he can to stay ahead of Brooks. So this is a big year for him to do that. Josh asks a good question here. What do we need to hear in camp about OL that will make us feel comfortable about the depth? I need to hear that the coaches are comfortable with the depth. That's what I want to hear. I'm not going to hear anything in practice that tells me, you know, I would be shocked if those guys can hold their own against the edges that they have in the program. But the coaches are going to have a pretty good idea of what to expect for them. So if I hear that the coaches feel good about offensive tackle, I'll share that. That's what I'm hoping to hear.
Yeah. On the inside, Nate Kibble, who is it? I think you said earlier that he's probably a year. Yeah, you say it at the end. He's a year away, but still things are looking good for Nate Kibble future-wise at least, right?
Yeah, I think he's going to be the starter after Campbell departs. he could play this year, but like I said, it's just a little bit early. You want to play these guys right on the perfect timeline. You don't want to see Christian Jones out there struggling mightily for 2 years. You want to see him come in and play like he did the last 2 years. So it's all about, you know, getting them in the fold right when they're ready. You know, hopefully that's the case with Neto at guard. This is the year for him to take off. And then, you know, but next year's probably the year for Kibble. However, he could play this year if need be.
Cool. Whew. And then we hear about young Andre Kojo. Could get a look at guard if the right need arises. My biggest thing, too, is just beyond depth is, like, can these guys run block? Rewatching the season, it was so hit or miss, you know, on if we could do that. If we can get a consistent push. I like our pass protection, and we talk about that a lot. We had good pass protection, but not necessarily against the top-end teams. So I also want to see good pass protection versus NFL-style defenses with NFL-style pressures. A big year for me to watch the offensive line, not just in development sense, but schematically and in the coaching sense. I'll have an eye on the offensive line more than I normally would. All right, cornerbacks. We lead with Caleb Chester here, but really it was just Eric's sneaky Trojan horse to ask who is the fastest corner, which we have to do for the fans. It's frankly all they care about when it comes to defensive backs. And it was Jalen Gilbo. Once again, kind of a Jahdae Barron thing, right? Like, is he going to be fast enough? Apparently. So that'll be the trick. And he hit the magic 22 miles per hour mark, which is what you need to do.
Yeah. He's, you know, when I was checking on him and Barron, last offseason, this was before Barron made that move, I was told, you know, both those guys are fast enough for corner. And then we saw what Barron did at the combine, ran faster than anybody expected. These guys are getting faster on campus. You know, that's bottom line is Torrey Becton's getting the most out of these guys. They're high-performance machines, and they're fine-tuned. And, you know, Gilbo, the knock on Gilbo coming out of high school was, I think, people questioned his long speed, recovery speed. He sounds like he has it. Now, That doesn't mean he's going to beat out Kobe Black. He's got to have a really good camp to do that. But if he doesn't beat out Kobe Black, the issue isn't going to be speed.
Yeah, and my big thing was, so I've been watching Gilbo a lot, and there was just little issues. Like, he would have inside leverage, and he would let the guy beat him across his face. You know, like, there was just a lot of those little problems with Gilbo's tape as I watched him critically. So some of the awareness I just wasn't happy with. The big example is if he would have blocked for Barron on that interception with Georgia instead of trying to cheer, we probably could have scored there. There was just a lot of these mental lapses I didn't love about Gilbo's tape, kind of trying to pick him apart. With corner, there's less of that, right? It's more about your athleticism. Your roles are generally more defined, like stay on top of the number one receiver, maybe sometimes, you know, cloud the flats. So maybe with a little bit less – processing as well at corner, we could see that jump with Gilbo. But like Eric says, Kobe Black, when does the talent beat experience? And generally, you want experience. If you're hiring anybody, you want experience if the talent's not there. Experience is a proxy for talent because they've built the talent through time. But if you just have the talent, that's what we're looking for, the talent. So that's going to be the interesting part with Gilbo and Black. And I don't know. Kobe doesn't have enough tape for me to really break down how smart of a player he is yet. So that'll be interesting.
He seemed pretty savvy against Vanderbilt, but I think he's only like 10 snaps. So, it's limited sample size. But Kobe's coming on for sure. Kobe is definitely going to make it a very interesting experiment. But also, they're both going to play. It's kind of like whoever's finishes third is still going to get a lot of snaps like Gavin Holmes did last year.
Yeah. I have to say, go back and watch Kobe versus Matthew Armstrong. I think he was leading receiver in SEC at Arkansas, right? I mean, he was in his hip pocket, giving him business for a young guy. So you can watch
Armstrong. That was a do-it-all receiver too for them, man. David Keith Williams, always with his strong statements. Cade Phillips is the fastest cornerback on the roster, not Gilbo.
Well, I mean, if you go by their track times in high school, but they're not running track out there. They're playing football, and Cade Phillips has not gone faster than Gilbo to this point. Now he was faster in high school, but Gilbo's got 4 years in college program, Torrey Becton's program, that's turning out NFL speed one after another. So Cade Phillips will probably be faster than him, but he's not faster than him by miles per hour right now. Grayson Littleton is actually faster than Cade Phillips right now based on miles per hour.
Yeah, the GPS says what the GPS says. Exactly. I mean, you can't really argue with it. It just tells you who ran the fastest,
And how they're moving in practice can also relate to how well they actually know the playbook and what they're doing, right? Uh-huh. Gilbo's got to move with confidence at corner. And you talk about his film at slot, man. Sometimes a nickel, you can be lost in space, man. So it's like, I want to make a play because I'm not getting any action because everybody's reading me. So you kind of jump things. But at corner, Gilbo knows his stuff, so he can move a lot faster than he did at nickel.
Do they GPS them? Like, whenever they're talking, they hit 22, right? Is this when they have the catapults on and they're running sprints? Or is this actual game speed, like practice speed? Because a corner, really, if you're running 22 miles an hour, you got beat. Because generally, you're in a shuffle. You're not doing a lot of straight down, like sprinting of the corner, unless they turn around and get you on a fade. So do you know how they actually pull those numbers?
I'm not sure how they got those numbers. I'll find out. In the past, they've gotten them both ways. It's top speed that you hit in practice or top speed that you hit, sprinting. I didn't ask which one was which.
Yeah. I just wondered that. Do we see a shift into a more run-oriented team considering the strengths of the perceived strengths of the offensive line starters? We're going to more man gap schemes. So counter power, tight end's going to pull, guard's going to pull. So I know that emphasis will be slightly different. We still ran it a lot last year. We act like, we didn't run it. We ran it a lot, but that'll be more of the focus. And then with Arch's run ability, I think that adds to it. So
Sark is always going to run the hell out of the ball. So it's, it's whether or not it's just more effective or more efficient. The running run game was not always efficient. It was way too hit or miss.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Grayson Littleton, his 50th mention. You guys should pay attention. When a freshman gets mentioned this much, he's going to be on the field eventually here. Littleton was a little faster than Manny Muhammad when he committed. Okay. Caldwell did throw a pick. Which, according, you got to – with the fans, he threw a pick. It's over for him. But he's doing a good job. Yeah, he doesn't lack confidence, does well to identify coverages. That's going to be incredibly hard with what they're doing here. He's a leader for quarterback, too. That makes sense why you would bring him in. I know fans like Trey Owens. That's all good. But there's generally a reason you bring a senior quarterback in that's only going to be here for a year, and it's to be a steadying factor. God forbid something happens with Arch.
Yeah, experience goes a long way at quarterback, obviously. And he's definitely has it. He's calling out the coverages, when they're out there in 7-on-7. He knows what he's looking at. Yeah, he did throw that pick to Chester, whatever. But he's by far the most likely backup at this point.
Cool. And then Eric keyed in on this, and so did I. When he was at the SEC Media Day pressers, he went on to name the roster. But he started off with like three or four guys. And Merod Watson was one of the first he mentioned. And that perked my ears up. Same with Eric. So why did Sark mention him so early as a young transfer?
Well, he's the best athlete outside of Justice Terry at the position, and we can kind of quibble on whether or not Justice Terry is a D-tackle, a D-lineman, or whatever.
Oh, we will in a second.
Yeah, as far as the actual D-tackles go, the guys that weigh over 300 pounds, let's call it, he's the best athlete, puts in a lot of hard work, too. carries himself like a veteran rather than just a sophomore. So we, you know, I'd heard something a couple weeks ago that was very glowing about Watson's chances or likelihood of starting. And then when Sark said what he said or the way he said it, I think it kind of confirmed that guy's going to be a starter.
Yeah. And he has eligibility. So that's
exactly.
That's my guy.
Justice Terry, freak athlete. So defensive tackle by trade, but he's running and working out with the tight ends and edges, which should let you understand his mobility.
He's right in line with the edges too, the way he moves. Like he's not beating Colin Simmons, but he's keeping pace with those guys. He's a total freak. They don't let him run with the big boys because that's not going to push him hard enough. But he's a hard worker, freak. Just has to, you know, we have to figure out what his role is going to be in year one. And then he's got to continue putting on weight. Now, I don't think he weighs 268. I just can't believe that. I've seen enough big people in my life to think that he's over 280. But, you know, we'll see. We need to see what his usage is going to be. They've got so many D tackles that they can play this year. And, you know, I think we'll probably mention Josiah Sharma here in a minute. We're hearing a lot about him, too. So I don't know how they're going to play all those D tackles. You know, some guys are going to be probably getting 15 snaps a game with the amount of bodies they have.
I was watching the Ohio State All-22, but it wasn't like the official All-22. It was playing the whole game. And, you know, you realize we rotate a lot at defensive tackle. You don't understand until you're able to watch the whole time. I mean, it was two snaps, guys are in and out.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to figure it out. And then also he might be able to play that base defensive end for Terry, give him a position and a role he can understand, and then expand it like an Anthony Hill. When players are this special, you want to get them engaged early because they can help you early. You just don't want to overwhelm them with, you know, an entire scheme if they're a true freshman. But Terry freaked me out a little bit because he was like jacked in eighth grade, you know? And so I was like, man, he might run out of space here. He looked like a bodybuilder in eighth grade, but that doesn't look to be the case. I was worried he might be maxed out. I was incorrect on that.
Yeah, totally different from Kendrick Blackshire.
yeah, totally for sure. Good example of my worry. All right, Josiah Sharma, the California product, looks awesome in the pictures we've seen too. Like Eric says, it looks like a future star.
Yeah, I'm encouraged by the that we're hearing how well he moves at that size. You know, 350 pounds and moving really well. I'm hoping that we get some Trevondre Sweat action out of the guy eventually. But he sounds like he's going to be a multi-year starter, and I'm not sure there's a better person to pair next to a Justice Terry once Terry's a little bit bigger. Than Sharma. And Sharma, it sounds like he's not just a space eater. He might make some plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage too, kind of like Sweat. So bright future. You know, we liked him a lot as a recruit, so we're not surprised. I saw him work out at Folsom. He worked his tail off. So I'm not surprised cool. about it, but you definitely want confirmation on these guys, and we're getting that on him.
Yeah. Man, we have some young guys, man. Future's bright there. And then Eric points out just kind of a macro thing. He's never seen the mental evals were so strong in the D tackle room, man. D tackles can be very sketchy, especially when they're young. They're not known for their mental focus. A lot of their ability came from mom and dad and being 6'8". So a lot of times they have to grow and understand the gift they've been given, but it's looking like we got some sharp minds and some tough players there.
Yeah, the crazy thing is a lot of them are transfers, and you know, you typically don't know them as well because you don't have the same process. And then a lot of them are young, and like you said, a lot of times these D tackles they mature over time. You know, I remember Chris Nelson was about to transfer, and then he stuck it out and had a really good senior year. And Trevondre Sweat, you know, we were wondering about him a couple times in his career, and he stuck it out, became a leader. Alfred Collins over time became a much better leader. Same with Broughton. But, you know, these guys are already hitting the ground running. It's hard not to be extremely excited about the future of D-tackle, given the last class, given the transfers that have multiple years of eligibility, Alex January, and then the class that they have right now. D-tackle is an incredibly healthy position.
This seems to happen. Eric, what position do we need to bully the coaches on this year? Because every time we do it, we get results. And when it was edge, they were like, all right, here's Colin Simmons. When the linebackers sucked, they were like, here's Anthony Hill. So who do we need to bully this year?
I think I'm still on offensive tackles. I think they've taken a few too many guards and not enough tackles. That's my criticism. Kyle Flood needs to get his act together right now.
Yeah, Kyle Flood, what are you doing, man? Yeah, what are
you
doing?
But, you know, they've had some bad luck, right? Or they've had some good luck, but guys leaving early. Goosby's probably about to be number three. Leaving early in a row like that, that's tough. It's hard to plan for that. So yeah, maybe hopefully they'll go portal and be fine. A lot of long way to go before then, though.
Okay, cool. That's the position of bowling. We're expecting 7-5 stars next cycle at that spot. This is interesting too. Biggest impact kind of freshman. Seems most likely that Justice or Dalen McCutcheon at slot will have the most impact as a freshman. Do you agree with one of these two?
We've been hearing a lot of good stuff about Dalen, that's for sure. He's got DeAndre Moore in front of him, so that's his problem.
Yeah.
Justice Terry, I think that's probably the guy that they figure out how to get on the field in unique situations and get the most out of, get the most bang for their buck out of him. You know, we saw it last year with Colin, the year before with Anthony Hill. Justice is a guy that you can get on the field and, you know, third and long, he could play interior there, or maybe he could play edge or defensive end when they're in base. So there's a lot of different ways that they can get him on the field if he's ready. I would probably throw Jonah in there just because he's so freaking special. Jonah Williams. Now, how are they going to do it? I don't know. Probably in a dime package. But Jonah is just too talented to not make an impact as a true freshman.
Yeah, Michael, we're getting feedback from something. Oh, we're good now. Let me see. I'll mute Eric and see if it's Eric. Yeah, it was Eric. I'll bring you back on. Go on. Maybe it's good. Am I getting feedback now? No. It was Coach. So with Jonah Williams, Taft, when they were interviewing Media Days, he said that he was there on the field with Jonah, and he told Jonah, hey, go play high safety. You can show him your range. And Jonah Williams like, no, I want to learn both positions right now. So that's also a big aspect for Jonah Williams' mental eval. And if you guys are not baseball fans, he was always up in the dugout when even what he was not playing. He was always super locked in. Of course, when he got on the field, he was the most confident player, sometimes maybe too confident. But the mental eval and Jonah Williams, he has another thing where you're seeing talent mixed with a lot of drive. So Jonah Williams is exciting too. I don't know how you integrate him. I don't know if there's a dime package or a situation you can get him in. But I think, you know, special teams too would play a big factor. But Jonah Williams also exciting. It's just kind of hard. We have so many good safeties right now. It's tough to see how that's going. Kind of shake
out. We're going to learn a lot about it in August because that's when we'll start hearing about dime packages being installed and that sort of thing. Right now it's been a lot of base. They haven't really been doing any dime stuff, but that'll change in August.
I think Cade Phillips will have the biggest impact as a true freshman. I think his talent and ability will have him at least in the two deep at cornerback by the end of season.
Probably not, but he's been impressing people with his technique. And when you hear about him having a good technique, you start wondering what the hell the ceiling is because he's got the length and the athleticism in spades. So if the technique is there, he's going to be a really, really good corner. What I like about him is he could play either corner spot. A lot of those longer kids are usually just stuck to the boundary, but he could play field or corner or boundary. But I think he's got Kobe Black ahead of him. And he's got Jalen Gilbo ahead of him. So, and then, you know, Muhammad's going to start at the other end. And Warren Roberson, we probably don't talk enough about Warren. Warren Roberson is coming along too.
Yeah, and no one's arguing that he's an NFL player. Like, that's what we hear too. But it's just we got to see at the corner spot. All right, how are we feeling about the money allocation going forward as it is related to roster management? I can't imagine we bring in any more expensive high school guys with a need to retain talent in the off season.
Yeah, man, I don't know exactly how that's going to work. That's when you see those reports that Texas has the most expensive roster in college football, I find that very easy to believe. Now, that's people are conflating that with the recruiting class, which is not the same thing. Right. But that period after that Ohio State game, I can't put into words how chaotic that was behind the scenes with schools trying to come after guys, Colin, Anthony Hill, Ryan Wingo, DeAndre Moore, Malik Muhammad. I mean, it was one retention deal after another, and you know that cost a lot. So I don't know how it's last year. Like, I think they got a little bit caught by surprise with how much the attempts at poaching there were. This year, I don't think they'll be that surprised. But you're right; they have to save for a rainy day, and then they're probably going to need a tackle in the portal, which we know that's going to be expensive. Oh. Luckily they won't have a ton of portal needs. You know, that could change. But based on what we learned this season, guys might declare earlier than we expect. you know, Texas is going to do as well as anybody, but they got, it was pretty fortunate that they didn't lose a big time player this past cycle. I was a little surprised. I was kind of sounding the alarms on that in that 5-day window after the season. I was surprised that they didn't lose somebody. It was very, very close.
Yeah, that was a tense moment behind the scenes of just like knowing what's going on. That retention stuff is scary, and it's the cost of success. Sark, during the Coaches Association, also got pretty candid on NIL, more than I've heard him. Mm-hmm. They're a little more open in that environment, but he was basically saying, look, man, if I sign a guy to a 3-year guaranteed deal, he shouldn't be able to leave after 1 year. He's like, it makes no sense. You know, he's like, if I wanted to leave Texas, he said, if I wanted to leave Texas, which I don't, then I'd have to pay out my contract. So, but he just said straight up, look, if we're signing guys to 3-year guaranteed deals, they need to be here for 3 years.
Right.
And it's hard to argue with that logic. So that's the tricky part. Is the poaching going both ways? Yeah, of course. People are coming after Texas's roster all the time. You'd be dumb not to try to come for Texas's roster, you know?
Hey, what do you say, Homer? Everybody's on audition for Texas every time we play against them, right?
Yeah, you know? Anytime I see a good receiver at some lower ranks, I'm like, don't play too well. Sark's going to be interested in that player. I have a little graphic The Athletic put out. I'll pull it up in a second. It's the most valuable programs. Shockingly, Texas is the most valuable at $2.38 billion. Here's the thing, too, right? When we think of coaches like Sark, we think of him as a football coach. He's leading a $2.38 billion enterprise, too, as like a CEO. Yeah. Like, you have to think about the real management skill behind the scenes this takes to have the staff. Of course, you have your directors and levels above that. But it's impressive. These guys that are good at football end up having to manage $2 billion enterprises. And that's what I think Sark has done and surprised me exceptionally, is his ability to do this, the CEO side of this. We keep getting questions, even on the board. Why is the defense better than the offense? And it's a fair question to ask, but that's because Sark did not fall into the offensive coordinator trap of it's all about the offense. And those offensive coaches will gear practices to favor the offense oftentimes, and it hurts their defense on game day. And that hasn't happened here. So Sark is as a manager of a program, that's the biggest difference. His NIL ability, his recruiting ability to manage both staffs, that's what's been most remarkable to me about Sark off the field. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, he's got two of the best mentors you could possibly have, and really three if you take it back to Lavelle Edwards, but with Pete Carroll and Nick Saban, both those are defensive guys. I think it's worked wonders for him that those guys were defensive rather than offense. He already had the offensive pedigree. Again, that comes from, you know, BYU and just him playing quarterback. But then he gets to see how to run a full program through the eyes of two of the best to ever do it. Nick Saban is the best to ever do it. And like I said, those guys are defensive minded. So he knows what good looks like on both sides of the ball. And you're right, he didn't go pull a Brenton Venables and go get an $850,000 defensive tackle when he had bigger issues on offense. He gives to the defense as much as to the offense. And this class, this recruiting class, is going to be better than on the defensive side than on the offensive side for the second year in a row. I think that says a lot about him. And he's a total football coach. Now he's going to have to probably win a natty for that for people to really recognize it. But he's a total football coach, 100%.
That might be the death of us, though. Like, as soon as he wins the national championship, I'm going to be like,
all right,
what job's open in the NFL? We careful what we wish for. It's almost like you want him to be, hey, get to the national championship, lose by one, and then come back.
Once he wins one, that's the first thing I'll be watching for is, you know, was that satisfy him? You know, what does he have? Does he want to win a national championship and a Super Bowl? Yeah, that would be an amazing accomplishment. So,
yeah,
I'm a little bit concerned about Sark. I've been concerned about the NFL since he was hired. But obviously he's done a really good job on focusing on the task at hand.
This is a good point because I made it. So, therefore, I've been extremely impressed how balanced he is. I think Paul R. Homer was the one that pointed out he'd rather win by choking a team out. Sark plays an NFL style of football.
He does. Yeah.
So in those third quarters, man, if he's up, and then I watch a lot of McVay and Shanahan interviews trying to understand what the top minds think, and they reference Sark a lot. They see Sark as an equal, and Sark sees himself as an equal. So, he might want to go join his boys up there because him and McDaniels say that they basically run the same offense, which they do. I've been watching a lot of Miami. So that's the thing too, is Sark's in this, he's the only one in the club that's not in the club. And it's a prestige league, right? You want to know you can do it. We've seen him already go to the NFL before. you know?
Yeah.
He got offered the Raiders when he was like 31 years old, and he turned it down, which is also a crazy story.
It's less stressful. Obviously, game days are incredibly stressful in the NFL, but you don't have the day-to-day stress. You don't have the recruiting. It would make a lot of sense. Now, as long as Texas has the right people involved in the hiring process, we're putting the cart way ahead of the horse here, but
we're already getting into coaching search. I love you, Rex St. Charles. Save that for the moment, but I like where your mind's at, but we're already starting our coaching
search. Here we go.
Maybe Dillingham.
Yeah, maybe Dillingham. But, yeah, that's the only fear if Sark wins it all, because we also know that he's capable of going to the NFL and doing this thing. So that's the thing, too. Anybody else on this list that kind of stands out to you? I think they all – it's like, yeah, it makes sense. There's no weird ones to me. Texas A&M, number 15. That's weird. I thought they were really rich.
Yeah, that's I'm a little bit surprised Ohio State isn't ahead of Georgia, but, you know, we're quibbling over dollars here.
Just a couple bucks.
USC should be worth a lot more, but you know they've had trouble regaining the glory from the Carroll years, and not sure that Riley's going to be the guy to do that.
Man, Nebraska, they're going to build in Oklahoma, man. I didn't know they were in seven.
Yeah, and Nebraska, pretty remarkable staying power for being dead for, you know, a couple decades.
That fan base is absolutely fervent. So
it's remarkable how, they have a great fan base. Arkansas at 23, Miami 24, Ole Miss making the top 25. I didn't see that. So
what about Mississippi State?
I don't think they made it. Dude, here's my thing. My uncle went to Mississippi State because they have a good vet school. So he's a big Mississippi State fan. So I've always kind of like Mississippi State's been in my orbit. I could not do it, man. Those cowbells literally drive me insane, dude. Like I could not do it just simply for the cowbells. I'm fine with Mississippi State, but man, I don't even like going to concerts. Like I'm an old man. I'm like, it's too loud. I'm an old guy, man. The cowbells is what would get me, man. That fandom, but Texas on top, most valuable, and taking advantage of being most valuable. I will not be at any Starkville games. If Eric put me on the beat, I'd be like, I'm sorry, dude, can't do Starkville. We can do whatever else you want to do, man. All right, chat. Thank you guys, Coach Eric. Thank you, Eric. Have fun down in the bay, man. That'll be enjoyable.
Yep,
and Coach,
the Yay area. Right by, I'll be right by Vallejo too. Go stop by and see E40.
I was gonna say, I thought you were gonna say see a recruit, but no, we'll do E40. All right, guys, chat. Thank you, Eric. Thank you as well. And guys, don't forget, $1 until August 30th. $1, man, that's the cheapest you can go without being free, guys. You can do it. $1 until 8:30. Camp's about to heat up, so Eric's going to be dropping nuggets.
Yeah.
This is only a piece of what you get on Inside Texas on the shows, guys, so go check it out. And, of course, recruiting news has been fun lately as well. Buy our homie Paul's book too, man. It's seriously the best. You're going to get a ton of insight, but on top of that, you're going to get strange historical references that you did not know were even related to football in the slightest. How his brain works is remarkable, and it all makes sense. So go check it out, guys. Links in the description. There. Have a good one, y'all. And this was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors.